Good morning, everyone. Boker Tov. Everybody have sheets? Welcome. This morning we are studying not just a Hakdama, but a figure for a very specific reason. We're studying the Sforno, Rabbi Ovadia Ben Yaakov of Sforno. And I'll explain why we're studying the Sforno today. So tonight is the first yahrzeit of Harav Refaim ben Harav Refoel, Zichrono Levracha, Rabbi Ralph Pelkovitz, Nechama Saba. And it seemed to me that it would be appropriate to study the Hakdama to the Sforno, considering that two of Rabbi Pelkovitz's works, which are what I'm holding in front of me here, this is the Pirush of the Sforno on the Chumash, and the other one is the Pirush of the Sforno on Pirkei Avos, which is what we're going to focus on today. These works are not just significant in terms of understanding the Sforno and making the Sforno's commentary accessible to a broad audience. I believe this is the first English translation. I don't know if there was ever one since of the translation of the Sforno, but the Sforno's life has a very important message for us, at least in this room, for those of us who subscribe to the lifestyle and the hashkafa of our community. The outlook of our community is very important, and it fits very much with the life that Rabbi Pelkovitz led, which I was incredibly blessed to participate in for the last over 15 years. So the Sforno was born, just a little bit of background. So he was born in 1470 or 1475, we don't know exactly, 1470 in Cesena, Italy. And he dies in 1550 in Bologna. Now this point is very significant because what's happening in Italy in the end of the 15th century, things are pretty good for Jews. You know, in the second half of the 16th century, after the death of Sforno, things go really south. Many of you are familiar with book burnings. These are taking place in the second half of the 16th century, but predominantly, things were relatively good for Jews. So the Sforno, in addition to his Torah studies, he lived in Rome for 30 years. He studied math, medicine, and philosophy, general philosophy. He also was a medical doctor, so he's referred to by some achronim as the Gadol Harofim, the great doctor. And they don't mean that in the medical sense. He was the Gadol who was a Rofe, which maybe at other times, certainly in other places in Europe, that would be unheard of. But this was a time, and he was a person who was beyond just the confines of the Torah learning that he did. He was a very broad person. I use that term specifically, and I'll explain why in a minute. He was, on the one hand, an Adam Gadol, a great rabbinic luminary. He corresponded with many of the great rabbinic figures of his day. Probably the most prominent and well-known is a man by the name of Maharam Padua, Rav Meir Katzen Ellenbogen from Padua, also from Italy. There was a very important... Do we have more packets floating around? Let's pass to the back. Barbara, you want to maybe just pass those two? So he was, on the one hand, a very important Torah scholar. Maharam Padua has some very important shuvos. He also wrote several svarim, including a work on philosophy, Jewish philosophy, on Hashkafa, called Or Amim. And then he wrote commentaries to Shira Shirim and what other? He has a few other commentaries on Tanakh. But at the same time as being in the world of Torah, he was also in the general world. He actually sent copies of some of his Pirushim on Tanakh to King Henry of France. Because somehow I would have to ask, you know, somebody who actually knows something about this topic, me, then I just pretend to purvey whatever is around. He actually had relationships with some very prominent non-Jews, philosophers, other physicians, politicians. So he was an incredibly worldly and involved person. So he lived in Rome, as I mentioned, for decades, and he set up at Beis Medrash in Bologna, which is where he lived for the rest of his life. So here you have a person who really lives in two worlds. And there are different ways to understand this idea of living in two worlds. But isn't that, I would say, many of us in this room, I don't want to speak for too many people on their behalf.
It's just one world.
Ah, all right. Shoshana, you're already giving away Rav Huttner. It's unbelievable. We'll get to that in 1 second. 1 second, the spoiler. Always the spoiler. There's always somebody. We're going to get to this awesome letter from Rav Huttner in 1 second. So that, but to me, this life is very much about what we're experiencing. Many people in this room, right? Today is Sunday, so we have a chance to sit and learn. But many people in this room come tomorrow are not going to be in a Beis HaMedrash. They're not going to be writing a sefer. They're going to be out in the world. Maybe even after we finish this year. We're living in two worlds. That's what our community is about. And that was Sforno's life. So the first mention when we think about this is you recognize that somebody can be living in both worlds and be a tremendous, preeminent Talmud Chacham, a very spiritual and pious person. An Adam Gadol Ba'anakim. It's not impossible. It's difficult. But if you have the right focus, that's number one. But I think it tells us something else also in terms of us, and this is what Shoshana was alluding to for a second, probably, is this. There's a very beautiful and important letter from Rav Yitzchak Huttner. Rav Huttner was a Rosh Yeshiva for many decades in Chaim Berlin, in Brooklyn. Then in the end, he was very connected to Israel. He set up a yeshiva in Har Nof called Kolo Pachad Yitzchak. He was a very, very prominent figure. And Rabbi Pelkovitz actually, on occasion, had things to do with him, although they were not exactly overlapping. Rabbi Pelkovitz, he was born in America. His father was a Rav for many years in Bridgeport, Connecticut. His father, Rabbi Ephraim Pelkovitz, was a very prominent Rav in Connecticut. And he studied in Torah Vadas under a great rabbinic luminary by the name of Rav Shlomo Hyman. Rav Shlomo Hyman was one of the greatest pre-war European giants whom Rav Chaim Ozer Grozensky sent to America. So he was one of the founding Rosh Yeshiva of Torah Vadas. And Rabbi Pelkovitz learned there. Actually, when he was 12 years old, his father went on a sabbatical to what was at that time Palestine. And he learned in the high school of the Chevron Yeshiva. He always had a very close kesher to Knesset Yisrael because he learned there in the high school as a boy. His bar mitzvah, I think, was in Israel. Anyway, so he once told, Rav Huttner was a Slabodka kind of personality. He was a very regal and majestic person. He had a tremendous aura about him. So Rabbi Pelkovitz, Zichron Lebracha, Sab once told me, he said he went to a wedding, and Rav Huttner got up to be the Mesader Kiddushin, and he was already older at that point, but all he had to do is he stood up right in front of, you know, at the chuppah. They have like two steps usually to get up to the chuppah. He just went like this, and all of a sudden, two bachrim appeared, one on one side, one on the other side, and he went, got carried right up the stairs. So Rav Huttner was a towering figure and a personality in many ways. So Rav Huttner corresponded with many of his students after they left the yeshiva. So this is a collection of letters. Rav Huttner's letters are in this volume called Pachad Yitzchak Igros Uksavim. Many of Rav Huttner's speeches, especially the Yom Tov Divrei Torah, were collected by students in these volumes called Pachad Yitzchak. So Rav Huttner gets a letter in 1954 from a student of his. And he says, I appreciate your letter very much, but I have to tell you that the struggles that you're describing in your letter, I can't really agree to them. I can't agree with what you're describing. He says, Hanacha pshuta etzlecha, it is obvious to you, you're making an assumption in your letter. Ki, and he writes here in English, and some of the letters here are in Yiddish. He had a very close connection to Rav Aaron Soloveitchik from Europe. I think they were Chavrusas. Maybe he was Rav Aaron's bar mitzvah, like, tutor when he was 12 years old, or something like that, or Rav Aaron was his bar mitzvah tutor, they went back to Europe. So some of the letters are in Yiddish, which was his primary language, and then he spoke in English and in Hebrew. So in the middle of this Hebrew letter, you'll see there are two little English lines. He says, Yur Hanacha, ki, parentheses, or what do you call it, quotation marks, secular career, he, double life. He says, Lumoser, it's obvious for me to tell you, says Rav Huttner, that Me'olam lo ha'yisi maskim, I would never agree, b'shum ofen, under any circumstances, le double life. I would never agree to encourage anyone to lead a double life. He says, that's terrible. He says, and it's true. Imagine somebody who rents an apartment to live somewhere, and then they also rent an apartment in a hotel. So they have one apartment over here, and then they have an apartment in the hotel. So he says, that's living a double life. You pretend like you live here, and then half the time you pretend like you live over there. He says, so that's a double life. But he says, wait a second. What if you rent a two-bedroom apartment? Is that a double life? Because you have two rooms, right? If you have one apartment here and one apartment there, so obviously you're leading a double life. You tell people you live in two different places. But if you have one apartment that has two bedrooms, what does it mean? You have a double life? No, he says, and this was your lashon. He says, "Bevadai sheyeshlo broad life." That person has a broad life. He lives in a two-bedroom apartment instead of having one and one. He has two. So he says, I'll tell you a story. He says, I remember, this is Rav Huttner speaking. Rav Huttner says, I remember, I once went in Yerushalayim to one of the great, great Gaonim, one of the great Echad HaMeyuchad Ben Gedol Yerushalayim. He doesn't tell you the name. But Rav Huttner was himself an Adam Gadol, and he was hanging with big, very big people. Very, very big people. He doesn't tell you the name of the person. So there was a man, I don't remember when he died, there was a very prominent physician in Israel. His name was Dr. Wallach. He was very well known in the observant community. And so Rav Huttner describes how he was sitting with his Adam Gadol, and they were talking about this doctor, Dr. Wallach. And he says that, Rav Huttner says that he remembers that when he was once in the hospital visiting somebody, this Dr. Wallach was there, and there was a patient who was getting wheeled into the OR, and he was going to do surgery on this patient. So he said to the patient before he walked in, he said, Dr. Wallach did, he says, can you tell me your name and your mother's name? So you should say a parak of Tehillim. And he says that when he told this over to one of the great Gedolim of Yerushalayim, the Gadol said, ah, I'm so mekana, I'm so jealous of Dr. Wallach. Because what a capacity to be a kli, a vessel for kavod shamayim that this physician has. So Rav Huttner writes to the boy, he says, Omnam haim zeh double life? Is that a double life that on the one hand he's a surgeon, and on the other hand he says a parak of Tehillim? That's leading a double life? That's not leading a double life, that's leading a broad life. Chalila lecha, chalila, milirus es atzmecha biri'i, Kofel shel chayim kfulim. Chalila, to view your life as a double life. Rather, he quotes a Maimar Chazal, beautiful rhetorical flourish. Kol hamarech be'echod. You have a long echod at the end of the Shema. Ma'arichin lo yom avushnosav. What does that mean? He says you live an echod, a long echod. Your whole life is one. It's not a bifurcated, split, fragmented life. It's ma'arich be'echod. It's all integrated. He says, all of these things, it's one circle. He uses the image of the circle to say, they're not separate entities. It's one circle, and it's all soviv around the Ravona Shalom is in the middle.
But this isn't new. I mean, the Rambam was a doctor
too. Right, exactly. So it's not new, but it needs to be reinforced. Exactly. So this idea, what's that?
So yeah. didn't the Rambam complain about how it was hard to lead those two lives?
So I think what we're talking about here is that this kind of existence, and this is something that Rav Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Livracha, used to articulate a lot, is that leading this kind of broad life is very challenging because it opens you up to being pulled in different directions. If you only have one room and one apartment, in a certain respect, it's easier because there's only one focus and one thing to balance. I mean, obviously, every time there are always things to balance. But now when we're saying you're leading a complex life, so that's tricky. How many people, how many times in our lives, forget looking at others, in our own lives, when we're honest with ourselves, that's usually like right before Ne'ilah. That's a good time to think of it. Like, when we're honest with ourselves, I can say for myself, how many times have I realized, you know what? I'm trying to balance living in these, in this complex way. How many times have I fallen off the wagon? Where the decision that I made or the allocation of time or money that I spent was not in consonance with the core of the Torah values. If we're honest with ourselves, sometimes, but that's because we've opened ourselves up to living a broad life. Living a broad life is complicated. It's not easy. To be able to live a broad life, which is always ultimately rooted in the Dvar Hashem, is very difficult. So that's what sometimes we feel like it's really being compartmentalized. So we're reinforcing, it's not new, and you see this also in the Amoraim for some of them. It's not the only approach to life, but the idea that this was the Sforno's actual life, this is what he did, and the Rambam, and this is what Rav Huttner is alluding to, and this is what I saw that Rabbi Pelkovitz very much had a similar mahalach, which is why I thought to bring it in. He used to have I heard this from him more than once, a line he used to quote from the Pasuk in Koheles, in the seventh parak in Koheles. I don't remember if he said this specifically about the New York Times, but it definitely had something to do with the fact that they had a subscription to the New York Times, which he read religiously. He was extremely well-read b'chlal, and they always had the Times in the house in Far Rockaway. So the Pasuk says, Tov Shmoa Garas Chacham. That's the first part of the Pasuk. It's good, Tov Shmoa, to listen, Ga'aras Chacham, the Musar of a Chacham, Me'ish Shomea Shir Kesilim. Shomea Shir Kesilim means a person who listens to the song of fools. So the simple pshat in that pasuk, it's better to sit and listen to Musar than it is to sit on Broadway and listen to foolish talk. So Rabbi Pelkovitz quoted, and very often he would quote from these anonymous, you know, he didn't have exact Mar Makomos for these things. You know, he quoted from Darshanim from Europe. No one knew who these, you know, you could call them the Sfar Makdoshim. But they were always, he just quoted from people, you know, the Magide Emes. He said the Pshat was, Al Pidrush, Tov Shmoa Garas Chacham. You know who it's good to hear Musar from? What kind of Chacham? From Ish Shomea Shir Ksilim. From a Chacham who also listens to the fool's talk. That Chacham will know how to give appropriate musar. A chacham who reads the New York Times is going to understand what is the context, the milieu of his congregants, and that chacham who is shomea shir ksilim, that person is going to be a good chacham, a good mochiach, and tov shmo agaras chacham. So, I wasn't sure exactly whether he said that about the Times, that that's shir ksilim, that that's fool's talk, or, you know, you can figure out exactly what it is. But the point was, is that being able to live a broad life and to be able to incorporate those things, that was something that was very important. We talked a lot about, we would talk about the kolol and how we work with the guys to be able to deliver, you know, speak effectively, because that was something he was very makbid on. He was a rabbi for over 60 years in the White Shul. Before that, he was in a smaller town. But he talked about the importance of understanding where people are. You know, where the people are. Ishomea Shir Kesilim. Understanding. And so he has one book that really reflects this idea also. So his son, many of you know my teacher, Dr. David Pelkovitz. So they collaborated on two books. So Dr. Pelkovitz would go to Far Rockaway, especially in the last couple of years where Pelkovitz didn't travel so much. Although, for those who recall, Baruch Hashem, one of the last trips that he made was here to Chicago for Chaim's Bar Mitzvah, a little over a year ago in the summertime. So Dr. Pelkovitz would come to the house, and he has downstairs, they have a split level downstairs. He has a study with endless papers and svarim and everything. And they would work on projects. So first they worked on a project on parenting, and then they have a book on psychology and Torah called Balanced Living. No, Life in the Balance, it's called. And what's the yesod of this book? So Dr. Pelkovitz brings the psychological research and stories and reflections, and then Rabbi Pelkovitz brings all these wisdom and you know, vortloch and ideas that he developed over the years, from, and many of them are from anonymous sources, because he's Rabbein from Europe and all these different chachamim who he heard. That's not a double life, Torah and psychology. It's a broad life, because he saw the ability to synthesize these two worlds, to take the wisdom of psychology and see how it reflected and it integrated with the Torah, especially because he was in tune with Musar, Shmoa Ga'aras Chacham, he was very in tune with Musar, so he saw how that fit together, and it wasn't the stira. Adrab, it was what Rav Putner called a broad life. So for that was psychology, but it could be true in everything. And this brings us back to the Sforno. When is the Sforno living? The Sforno is living 15th century in Italy. This is a period. That's right. So you'll, one of the things that he notes, what do I know about the Sforno's commentary? So we'll take his word from it, from his introduction to the Chumash, but also the introduction he has, Rabbi Pelkovitz in the commentary of Pirkei Avos, is that the Sforno is very sensitive to the aesthetic. And he reflects how the Torah also values in various places in his commentary on Chumash, brings forth the idea that the Torah and the world of art and music are not in conflict with each other, rather they're in consonance with each other. It's that same theory that it's a broad life, that you're putting all these things together. Yeah.
I just think about Reishi and all of the, you know, the introductions to family strife and relationships, and it begs that we analyze it, we go into it. So it's almost given permission for the second life. It almost says you have to apply.
Exactly.
Not just shut. It's like really stand them and just right there from the get-go.
Right. So you're taking the outside, the world from the outside, which we've noted the same thing from Rav Kook and others, with a measure of caution that the values are coming from the inside, but incorporating that, appreciating that. So having that, for example, in his case, having that appreciation from a cultural standpoint, from art and music, and from his academic standpoint of math and philosophy and medicine, using those experiences to have a greater understanding of the Chumash. Exactly. It's the same yesod. It's the yesod of the broad life. It's being integrated. Right.
One reading, you're done.
Right. So others would argue, they would say, of course there are Shivim Panim LaTorah, but the way to analyze that is exclusively from the inside. Right? And this is the age-old tension between these two approaches. But what we're pointing out is that there are many great Chachmei HaMasorah who valued this idea of the broad life of integrating. And of course, everyone to their, you know, varying degrees and different styles, but certainly for the Sforno, as someone who had both of those elements. Another interesting nakuda, and with the, for this reason, I chose Dafka to spend a few minutes on the Hakdamah to Pirkei Avos, because some of you will remember that probably about 5 or 6 years ago, we actually learned in this group the Hakdama of the Sforno to the Chumash. So I didn't want it to be a repeat for you because it would be boring totally. So we're going to do this one. But with, for the old Vosikin who have been here for 10 years, you remember that this, I don't want to, I know. I don't want to, what's going to be Stam Chazara? You think I'm just going to give you the same thing we had last time? So I'll do something new. But this was interesting. This was very telling to me, because in the Hakdama to Bereishis that we studied years ago, the Sforno sets out, and Rabbi Pelkovitz develops it also as part of his lengthy introductory essay in this volume. The Sforno relates what he thinks is the place of Jews in the general world, you know, humanity, non-Jews, etc. Because there are different ways to look at that also. You know, what is the place of the Jewish person, of Knesset Yisrael, of Klal Yisrael, vis-a-vis all the Goyim? You know, literally and using the vernacular. So, this Sforno says, look, our job is to be able to interact with and raise up on a moral and ethical level the society and the people among whom we live. Whether we're in exile, of course, when we're in Israel, to be that model. And that's why the Sforno has the original three strikes and you're out concept. Because he says, what happened? Initially, says the Sforno, all of humanity were supposed to be the emissaries of Hashem in the world. The problem is, so the first family, so one brother is killing the other brother. So that's not good. He says, okay, let's start again with Shace. We'll try again. So then after 5 minutes, we read in the Chumash, people are stealing, they're mugging, they're raping. It's horrible. It's terrible. So Rabbeinu Shlomo says, okay, we're going to pull the plug on this and we're going to have a big flood and we're going to start again. And then 2 minutes after that, what do we have? You have, according to Chazal, you have this catastrophe of Migdal Bavel. I love the Netziv's approach to this, that it was a totalitarian regime. It's either my way or the highway, which is why Nimrod threw Avraham Avinu into the furnace, because he was the first political dissident. It was religious, but it was about, you know, it's my way or the highway. It's like Stalinism. There's only one way. So Rabbeinu Shlomo says, well, what am I doing over here? It's not working. Three strikes and you're out. We can't handle it. So you know what we're going to do? We're going to do an experiment, or as you would say, an experiment. We're going to do a test. Let's do this. Let's take one man, one family, and see if they can live up to a godly standard. If they can live up to a godly standard, so then they could share it with everybody else. It's not that old goyim are worthless and useless. It's that it didn't work out with everybody, so let's try with one family, and then they can get it right and spread it with other people. So that's why, Sforno explains, immediately after the Migdal Bavel, I think it's Perek Tes and Bereishis, immediately after Migdal Bavel, Tes or Yud, right there, who comes on the scene? That's right, Avraham Avinu. Because that's the answer. The answer is to say, okay, it didn't work with everybody, but obviously, when the Rebbeinu Shlomo created in such a way, that means that that is the ideal. That's the goal and the model that we need to come back to. That all human beings, Lasaki Nolo Malchus Shakai, everybody, all of our neighbors, they should all connect to Hashem and bring godliness into the world to the extent that they have the capacity. But it's not to say a feh. And to me, that is another example of the Sforno's broad life of incorporating others into the spiritual world in which we live. And it reflects the fact that his life was integrated with the non-Jews. I forget the names. He has the names of some of the prominent goyim of the time. Yeah, someone had a
how are? How do we explain to the other nation that we didn't behave easily?
How do we explain that to them?
Exactly. You know, you have
oh, they see it very clearly. Exactly. They see that we can't get it together.
Exactly. So how do we explain that God made that decision and we didn't give up?
So that's what the Pasuk says. Unfortunately, the Pasuk says that we weren't chosen because we earned it. Because if we did, God forbid, so who knows where we would be today. We're ashamed of ourselves. We are. It's a terrible shame. It's a shame. Rav Schechter likes to tell a story of Rav Soloveitchik that after the Six-Day War, he used to take, for a period of time, he would take the train from Boston to New York to teach at YU, and then he would go home. He said that he remembers before the Six-Day War, he said that people, they were, first of all, ashamed to show that they were Jewish. I don't want to say it's before my time, but let's suffice it to say it's before my time. He says people were ashamed to be Jewish. He said that's number one. And he said number two, people were evangelizing all over the place. Because the Jews were schmutz. Gurnish mit gurnish. He said after the Six-Day War, he said all of a sudden there were Jews, he said, were going around with kippahs. They had a shtickel pride. And he says it was the biggest tochacha to evangelists who said that God had abandoned the Jewish people. Apparently he hadn't abandoned the Jewish people. Where this whole, you know, the idea that the Ribbono Shel Olam invested in us and we need to step up. So then ultimately it's shame on us and it's a chilul Hashem. It's a chil Hashem that we have not succeeded to fulfill our mission. So it's sad for us, and it's a chil Hashem. So guess what? Our job is to, you know, l'staki nolam malchus shakai. Each one of us can fulfill our divine mission, and hopefully we'll get it right really soon. That's the goal. But we don't have to convince them that we haven't left. You know, that's like the Melech HaKuzari. You know, that the Kuzari, in this discussion with Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, the Melech HaKuzari says, excuse me, you're such a big Zionist. You say every day, three times a day in Shemona Esrei, you want to go back to Israel. So why is everybody still living here? What's going on? Hey, you're not serious, are you? So what does the Jew say to the Melech HaKuzari? He says, I'm embarrassed. He says, you're right. Our prayers are kitzef tzuf hazarzir. We're just a bunch of pattering parrots. Just parrots. So obviously that's a very harsh condemnation. But the idea that, yeah, we need to take some responsibility here and do our job. All right. Enough Musa for us. Must speak. So these ideas of how the Sforno viewed art and music and medicine and non-Jews all fit into what seems to me as the Sforno's living mission, living legacy of living a broad life, which is what we are, that's what we're all about. Isn't that what, right? That's what our kolel, that's the message that we're trying to convey in our community. Baruch Hashem, I can thank so many people in this room who have enabled that to happen. Last week, Baruch Hashem, 450 Kanai Nahara. That's the story. That's the end of the day. That's why we're here. Because we want people to understand that this Masorah of a broad life is alive. And it's compelling. And it needs to be amplified. Yeah, last hour before we get to it, because well, I'm going to get...
See that all of this is based on life, all of it is based on the historical thing. If you lived in Russia, Lithuania, stuff like that, and they're killing you all the time, it's hard to be, you can't be involved in the general world and care about this stuff, and you just want them to let you be alone and not kill you. So Sforno is living in this time where it's good in Italy, where it's the Renaissance, where they haven't started killing the Jews because of the Counter-Reformation and all of this stuff yet. So it's a lot easier to do this than it was in a lot of the Christian Europe at that time. So your perspective would be on whether they were letting you live or not.
So I definitely agree. Yeah, Mrs.
I as always don't agree with Shelley because people who survived the Holocaust, many, can recount miracles. Almost everybody I know, I'm not even talking my own family, that survived. Many felt like they survived because of not just one miracle, a series of miracles. So I don't agree with it's based on having difficulty. That's how you make your choices. I think that it depends on who you are as an individual and of your faith.
Okay, so let me address both points. I think I agree with both of them. I'm not sure that they're actually in a disagreement. There's definitely a trend, and you have to ask a bona fide historian, not me, but there is no question. Let's say you look in Chachmei Ashkenaz. If you look at Rashi, the Tosfos, the Rabbeinu Tam, they did not live in a context that was favorable to Jews. You know, why is it that in the Balei HaTosfos you talk about shilas of kashering? Interesting kashering shilas that come up in Tosfos because Jews couldn't own bakeries. And the one day that they could bake was Sunday when the Gentiles were in church and they let them use the bakery. So how do you kasher the oven? Like things like that. They couldn't own land. They were so restricted. It was so you don't have the same feelings, I'm going back to between Jews and non-Jews, let's say in the Chachmei Sfarad when they were living in the golden age of Muslim Spain when life was good. So there's no question that there is a historical component to this. That yes, people like Ibn Ezra were very involved in Arabic culture because they weren't being persecuted. Whereas most of the Balei HaTosfos probably didn't have a good word to say about their Christian neighbors because if the Christian neighbors hadn't killed them yet, they were ready to in 5 minutes during the Crusades. So there's no question, and that's true. Sometimes when you read words, sometimes in Svarim, about non-Jews, and they're very, very harsh, we have to understand what they're talking about, who they're talking about, and when they're writing, and the experiences that they had. You know, thank God, I don't have to worry when I wake up in the morning that someone on my block is going to massacre me, or that they're going to call the police, and the police are going to come and kill me. Like, we don't live like that. But in those days, there were people who lived like that less than 100 years ago.
Sforno was able to go to medical school, which if he yes. had lived in Poland or Russia at that time, he would not have been able
right.
to.
Right, or Jews in America in the 1920s and 30s. Yes, my point is to say, okay, so now we're living in this same context, in the sense that we have the opportunities, so we have to make a choice. Well, we have three options. Option one is to shut out the outside world and say the only thing which is meaningful is the Torah HaKadosha. And that's one approach. We know people who subscribe to that approach. 1 second. The second approach is to say, well, because we have this opportunity to be engaged in the outside world, we will. And we're going to do that like many Jews did after the emancipation. And then what's going to happen? We're going to be so enthralled with the outside world, we will ignore all of the perils that exist in secular college, in literature, in the internet, in whatever cultural arts and sciences and things that are things that we need to be wary of. We'll just ignore all of the hazards, lock, stock, and barrel, and you know what? In two generations, the whole Jewish community will be gone. Or we could try to navigate the complex, broad life that the Sforno did, and that Rabbi Pelkovitz did in a different way, and that what we are trying to do, which is responsibly navigate both the Torah life, which is at the core, at the center of the circle, and integrating to an appropriate and healthy degree the outside world. Okay, we're going to hold the comments now for a minute just so that we can learn a little bit. Otherwise, we'll be here all day. And let's open. Yes, what's the question? Yes, open to page one. Yes. Anything that is not Torah. So it could be in certain respects, it could be secular literature, it could be commerce, it could be non-Jews as acquaintances, all those things in this respect get lumped together. So let's go to page one. Hakdomas Abir Harofim Moreno Rav Ovadia Misforno. The great Dr. Rav Ovadia Sforno. So first of all, you notice on the top, I'm going to read in the Hebrew. He has a measure of humility. He puts himself in a context. Just one other note. All right, I'll give one more note. Just thinking interestingly, this Sforno on Pirkei Avos was published during his lifetime, whereas the commentary on Chumash was published after he died, which is interesting to think about. Like today, I guess most people learn Chumash more than they do Pirkei Avos, but it's likely that in his time, more people were learning Pirkei Avos than they were Chumash, because he prioritized, or maybe it was financial reasons, I don't know. But this is published during his lifetime. So the Sforno says, I'm on page one, where you have...
In the right
order. Oh, no? Oh, I put three in the beginning. Fine. Yeah, so this is actually the Ksav Yad from the Osorah, not Ksav Yad, but this is the original print. Not as easy to read, let's just be honest. Yeah. I'm on, go to one. Three is... We'll get back to three in a second. Oh, okay. Is everybody on one? There's English on the bottom. You can follow. It's not literal, so I'm going to go with the top. Im shleimim v'chin rabim. There are many great, whole, and wonderful people. Hirbu imrei shefer. They spoke many beautiful words. Beferish hamasechta hazos. In the explanation of this masechta, hanikres maseches avos. This is what we call the tractate Avos. We call it Pirkei Avos. Shekula machmadim, that it is all machmad, nice. It's beautiful. And I hear the Renaissance voice. How resonant. He says, this is beautiful. You learn Pirkei Avos. He says, it's beautiful. Magidim darchei noam, limtzochein ve'enei elokim va'adam. The guidelines of Pirkei Avos, they're limtzochein, to find grace, Be'ene Elokim va'adam. Like it says in the Gemara, Ka'omram Zal, Ha'iman d'boy l'mevet chasida, l'kai mili d'avos. You want to become someone who is pious, a chassid, you should fulfill the dicta of Pirkei Avos. Hein rabim ata, mipirtei dvarim hayu be'enei k'tzas kadmoni ha'mefarshim k'muvu warim be'atzman. Many, rabim, lots of these little snippets in Pirkei Avos, in the eyes of the kadmonim, of some of the earlier sages, they are k'muvu warim be'atzman, what we would call self-evident. They're easily explainable. And therefore, they didn't have to write a long pirush on them. They didn't have to explain them because they felt that it's obvious what it means. It says it. He says, Ad ki atzru b'milin. They stopped their words. They didn't write. They didn't explain. Miladaber bam, to speak about them. So he says, I love all the pirushim on Pirkei Avos. They're all wonderful. The Gevaldik, it's great. But to be honest, some of them are a little too short because they don't address all the items. But some of them, he says, v'ktsasam, he'erichu l'manisam, they're so long. B'mayim arachav rav hakamus, they're just enormous quantities. You know, the Abarbanel, for example. Abarbanel, amazing mafarish. But if you drop an Abarbanel on somebody's foot, they would end up in the ER. Like, it's very overwhelming to learn the Abarbanel. By the time he has like 11 questions on every sugya in Chumash, by the time you finished all 11 questions, you missed 3 buses to the Kotel. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's so overwhelming. See, so sometimes you learn some Pirushim, they're forever. It's too long. Which is, by the way, one of the reasons, it's interesting, I don't know who chose, this would be something I should find out, who chose which Pirushim go in the Mikros Gedolos Chumash. The Sforno is one of them. And one of the Sforno's hallmarks is concision. Wrote a very concise Pirush, which is a very difficult thing to do, to write something which is innovative and creative and yet succinct. But he says some Pirushim, they're so long. Who can learn such a long Pirush? And that was before the ADD of cell phones. It's like no one can learn these long Pirushim. Haya l'torach be'eni mevinei zmanenu v'amru hine mitla. L'chein, next paragraph. Sha'afi ho'il ho'ilu p'nu l'hagid ha'musag etzliba. Here's what I'm going to do. K'malakit b'shibole g'dole chikrei lev. I'm going to collect the sheaves of the great people who came before me. I'm going to collect little gleanings, little insights. Haloko dvari v'divrei zulasi. And then I'm going to tell you what I think. And these are what the other things. And you know what? Yikonu yachdav la'eni zikne amenu. Let them be put before the elders. Yishpu tuheim. Everybody will judge. Do you like my pirush? If you like it, buy my book. If you don't like it, put it back. Gesunta hate. Eze yichshar lahatir kol safik v'chevetz Hashem b'yadam yitzlach v'aleimu atav milasi. And that's my goal. My goal is to write a medium-sized pirush. Not too short, not too long, just Goldilocks. That's what it is. If you like it, great. If you don't like it, put it back. Return it to the store. No problem. So he says, Ani, top left column, Ani Ovadia ben Mori Adoni Rabbi Yaakov Misforno, Bekatzar Milan, with short words, Kafio Efshar, Labarer, to clarify, Ulalabain, and to Libun, literally mean, Libun means to purify in a crucible, like Libun. Libun literally means to make koshering red hot, like 1,000 degrees. So I want to clarify in a crucible. Kavonas hamachaber, ho'alti ladaber, to do that, I have to start speaking, b'chalukes pirkei zos hamasecht of esidrim kafi musag etzli. He says, you know what the best thing to do is at the beginning? Is to get things organized. Did we ever think about why Pirkei Avos is organized the way that it is? I never did. Why did they? Because what is Pirkei Avos? What is it? It's a collection of teachings, of midos tovos, of character traits, of how we should lead our lives, values. There's just a huge, I don't know, it's a huge chalent pot of, you know, this statement and that statement. These are masora. So he says, there's got to be an organization. There's got to be a reason. So he says, I'll tell you what I think. So he's going to organize them, first of all, according to the chapter. So it makes it easier to learn. Makes it easier to remember. There's almost a scientific type of categorization here. There's a very specific Seder. So he says, I'll tell you what it is. V'zeh, ki omnam hischil habachaber b'perek harishon mimena. How does the author of Pirkei Avos begin, the first chapter? L'saper divrei ha-kadmonim, nesiei ve'ovos beisdin, me'reishis binyan ba'yesheni kefi seder hadoros. We're going to start with the sages at the beginning of the Second Temple period. What are those people called? What's that? Who are the men of this distinguished period? Yes, the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, the men of the Great Assembly. So that's going to start end of the Second Temple period. That's where we're going to start. Me'reishis binyan ba'yis sheni, from the beginning of the Second Temple, kefi seder adoros hema anshei Hashem asher amdu l'neis amim. They were a banner for the nations. Bedorosam. Notice again a reference here, the fact that these sages of the men of the Great Assembly were not just Chachmei Yehudim. They weren't just Jewish sages. They were illuminating the whole world. Right? There is a famous tradition in Chazal. We don't know exactly which Shimon HaTzadik this was, but that Alexander of Macedon, Alexander the Great, had an encounter with one of the Kohanim Gedolim. You're talking about a message that says that the Jewish people have something to contribute to humanity. Again, this is Sforno's view that we have something to take to the ganze Welt. So that's the first chapter. What? Vahoyu lema'oros, they should be for lights, lahavinu lahoros, to understand and to guide, lechachamim v'talmideim. So the first chapter says the Sforno is written to whom? Who is the address of the first chapter of Pirkei Avos? The rabbis. The chachamim. That's the first chapter. So you're thinking in your mind, oh, it says, Hemidu Talmidim Harbe, have lots of students. Well, that's not written for the common man. The Sforno says, that's because it's written, the first chapter, it's primarily for sages, for judges, for rabbis, and their students. B'me yisku es orcham, b'midos muskolos lahalos ner tamid. Ube perek sheni, what happens in the second chapter? Sider divrei nesiim, they organized the great chiefs of the Bezdin, Vizulasim, and others, Kamokin al Seder Hadoros, according to the generations. So it's genealogical, it's sequential, Masora, one to the next. B'ma'amarim, with statements. Morim Gam, third line to the end. Lahamon, to teach whom? The everyday people. The all of us, the masses. The first parak of Pirkei Avos are for the rabbis, the teachers. Second parak of Pirkei Avos are the teachings for us, the common folk. What's the next words that he, what is the next phrase? Zahirus mevia lidei zrizus. Where did he borrow that from? That's right. The Mesilas Yesharim. Right? You hear that reference? It's a clear reference, can't be missed. Now, it happens to be that we would point out, this Sefer predates the Mesilas Yesharim. But they're both working off that Brice of Rav Pinchas Ben Yair, this ladder of spiritual growth of Shlemus. A couple of weeks ago when we talked about the Hakdama to the Mesilas Yesharim, you see there's a lot of overlap here. It's about developing your Panemius, yourself, your Shlemus. I don't think it's an accident, I think it's exactly that. He says, what is Pirkei Avos about? It's about every Jew developing themselves, ourselves. It's not just for rabbis. Chapter 1 is for rabbis. Chapter 2 is for everyone. And therefore, he answers a question. Why is it that Hillel has statements in Chapter 1 and Chapter 2? If you're going in a Seder, Hillel should have been all in Chapter 1 if he's with the first group. So the Sforno says, no, Chapter 1 is for the rabbis. So Hillel has a lot of things to teach rabbis. And then chapter 2 is for the Hamonam. So Hillel appears in both places. Acha Shehishlim, all of those. Go to page 2. Go to page 2. Third line. Perek Shlishi. In the third chapter. It teaches Seder. It says, Sefer Divrei Gedolei Hadoros Kamokin Al Seder Dorosam. According to the generations, al adne zrirus gam lahamon, a third line of the paragraph, ma'orim lachzos benoam imre kel. Vidas Elyon, how a person should understand the words of God. How do we incorporate that teaching of Torah? The guidelines. Perek Revi, I'm running fast because we're getting close to the time. The fourth chapter. Also, according to the order of the generations, what does that teach us? Second to last line, Orchos Yosher. What is Orchos Yosher? What is the Orach is the path. Yosher, what's Yosher? That's right. How you should act like a mensch. That's the best translation you can get. How would you say that in Parsi? Menschlich. Do you say Menschlichkeit in Persian? You know, you live Menschlichkeit, right? You don't have to have a phrase for it. But that Orchos Yosher, I don't know how to better translate that. Orchos Yosher means be a mensch. Practical suggestions, how to be a mensch. Live like a mensch. That's the fourth chapter. Liknos, and how? What are you going to do? Liknos ulahasig zehirus uzrizus, b'moetzos vidas. And that, how are you going to do? By focusing, top left column, b'shiyosim ha'odam megamas ponov, set our goal, eyes on the prize, l'chvod ha'kel yizbarach b'chol ma'isav. We should act in a way which is always godly. And that should never be chas v'sholom, he says, neged kvodo or chilo shem kodsho. And then, in chapter 5, you get the development, higdil ha'inyan ha'iyon v'amais v'odiyo ma'yikru ha'machazikim b'am v'nimasu morde or al p'nei ha'adon dainu baldin. What are the consequences of a life? A person who makes godly choices, and then unfortunately, God forbid, a person who makes unhealthy choices. So this is the outline of the five chapters of Pirkei Avos. Why does he not include the sixth chapter? Because the sixth chapter is actually not part of the Mishnayos. There are six chapters. The sixth one is a Braisa. It's a Midrashic teaching, but they stuck it in there because we have a tradition to learn from Pesach to Shavuos. So you have 6 weeks. So they didn't know what to do. So they gave you a brisa called Perakinya Torah. They smushed it in there. But that's not really part of Pirkei Avos. I don't want to burst your bubble.
Artistic license.
Exactly. So they squeezed it in there. It's a brisa of Kinyan Torah. So in the Rabbi Pelkovitz's edition, in this edition, in the art school edition, this is where it ends. But if you go back to page 3, in the earlier edition, you'll see at the end. Okay, maybe you won't see it because it's a little bit washed out, let's be honest. But if you go to this page, the start number 3, he actually has another introductory section, which I just wanted to bring to your attention before we finish. Where now, you see on the left column, where he says, Hizbar Seder Pirkei Masechta, I explained to you the content of the chapters, the order of the chapters, I should say. Ata evor rimzei haprakim. Now I will explain to you the rimazim. What are rimazim? Hints. These are the little takeaway nuggets. So I explained to you what the order is. Now I'm going to give you the little nuggets. And this was very important, I think, to me to understand how we're going to lead our lives, especially when we think about how to lead a broad life. What do we need? He says, just go to Perek 1, Perek Aleph. The Torah has two components to it. Heyos haTorah mischalekes el chelek iyuni v'chelek ma'asi. Two aspects. Chelek iyuni, what goes on in our mind, how we think, what our outlook is, what are our values, and then there is the chelek ha'ma'asi. Our actions. We need to make sure, and then he goes on to each parak. You could take a look at each remez, but I thought this was perhaps the best way to end. When we lead a broad life, we need to make sure that we are always calibrating both. The chelek ha'iyuni, what is in my mind? What is important to me? What's valuable? What drives me? What's my motivation? What are the rocks? Or what's my bumper sticker, as Dr. Pelkovitz would say? What's my bumper sticker? That's the chelek ha'iyuni. That goes on in our mind. That's the value. And then there's the chelek ha'maasi. How do we actually live our lives? Pirkei Avos, he says, speaks to both. And that's one of the things that he's going to develop just even in these Ramazim, that there are aspects of life that hinder us, that are confounding, that are challenging. They challenge our Chelek HaYuni and they challenge our Chelek HaMaasi. So we're going to go back, he says, to learn Pirkei Avos to strengthen the Chelek HaYuni, the values-based discussions, but also the Chelek HaMaasi. How is HaMaaser Shiyasun? How we live our lives. And how important is that when you lead a broad life? Because when you're trying to navigate the balance and the relationship between the inner values and the Ribbono Shel Olam's Ratzon and the outside, it could be complicated. We could be compromised sometimes. So it's interesting to me that the Sforno reminds us always to come back for ourselves to these aspects of our lives, to the Chelek HaYuni and the Chelek HaMaasi, and to learn Pirkei Avos and to learn the Torah and to constantly be focused on these different aspects. So that's why he identifies here in the Pirkei Avos, and he in his own life had a Chelek HaYuni. He wrote a Chelek, meaning a pirush on philosophy, hashkafa, and that's something that comes up a lot in Pirkei Avos. He alludes to, you know, schar va'onesh, what are Jewish ideas, but also how do you live a Jewish life, Chelek HaMaasi, and making sure that we're living in that broad life according to the messages and the limud, the mahalach, that the Torah sets out for us. Thank you for coming, and I mentioned again that it should be Le'ilu Nishmas HaRav HaFol Ben HaRav HaFrayim.